Happy Mother's Day, Todd Farmer.
Well, thank you. Lisa Piccarelli, how are you?
I'm fine. I just figured I'd say that because sometimes when I'm talking about you, I'm like, that mother...
That explains a lot.
I know I'm a couple days early, but, you know, I want to get it in before the Sunday rush, you know.
Right.
Plus, I figured you'd be busy doing stuff. What do you do for your mom? Are you a mama's boy?
I love my mama, yes. We get to hang out a little bit, have some lunch. I try to get her like a gift certificate to a massage or something. She loves her massages. So that's pretty much it. I actually contemplated, you know, exploiting my mother's motherdom with the wine club thing, because Trisha just wrote a wine club post about Mother's Day gifts, and I was thinking about doing that and blogging about the whole experience. But I decided, no, I get enough wine here. I'll have a mom over, we'll have wine sometime together, and I'll still get her the gift certificate to her massage. And I won't exploit my mother again.
Well, isn't that what mothers are for?
Far too often.
That just, every time I see the word mother, I just think of that YouTube video for Method about clean like a mother.
That is a really good commercial.
I hope that they run that during Mother's Day, because I think that's very funny.
You have to talk about those for a second. Some of those are the funniest commercials I've seen.
You know, I have to tell you something funny is somebody I used to work with was an art director where I used to work, and she's fantastically talented in all kinds of different art mediums and, you know, photography and creating her own fabrics and textiles. And she now works for Method. And we connected on LinkedIn, and she asked me, like, do you know anybody that, you know, we're looking for a copywriter? And I was thinking, like, wow, that would be such a fun job to work over there. And I went and looked at their site just to see what they say. And it's like, well, we're kind of quirky. We're kind of this, you know. And I thought, well, that'd be a very fun job for somebody.
Oh,
of course,
my God.
I didn't know any copywriters, but, you know.
That would be a blast. Yeah, total blast. That they're very creative. That's cool.
Yeah, we should. I should make sure that I add the Method links to the YouTube videos.
Yeah, at least one of your favorite videos too.
I'm going to go
embed it.
Clean like a mother.
That's so cool.
Because I like to put the hurt on dirt. And you know what? I just think it's I love my San Francisco, so I like that they're here and they're local.
Drink.
And yes, you must drink every time I say San Francisco. So other than Mother's Day, I think the big, big thing that I feel like has ramped up in volume, at least in my little sphere, and that might just be the people I follow or whatever, but is Google Glass.
Yes. Sorry, I muted you for a moment. Yes, indeed. Let's talk.
Okay, was that just like...
I was taking a drink from my happy glass, my Google Glass.
Right? Your Google Glass, it's a cup, it says Google on it.
Yeah, my little smiley face glass.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. I think that it was funny to see this, you know, white men where there's some kind of website, white men wearing Google Glass. It's a Tumblr site. So it's just basically white guys wearing these. And I have to tell you, it kind of bugs me that it says glass and not glasses. Don't you feel like it should be Google Glasses?
I do indeed.
And I'm not sure why it's glass, but and then Robert Scoble, who everyone seems to know, he's a tech blogger, and you know, he's been doing this a very long time, and he has a lot of fans and a lot of different outlets for getting the word out there. He apparently took a shower wearing these, the Google Glass, and. You know, it wasn't a pretty picture, I'm going to say it, but, you know, it was supposed to prove a point. And I think that CNN had the right point of this whole thing, which is like, are all these pictures of white guys wearing this and doing it in the shower, like, is this actually making it so uncool that nobody will want to do it?
That's funny. You know, the picture I have is of the, you know, the total douchebaggy thing with your headset walking around for no reason, like at a coffee shop. You got this, you know, cell phone headset.
That's kind of what it says in the CNN article that I saw, which was, you know, it's really convenient to wear a Bluetooth earpiece constantly. So you never have to put it in. You never have to do it. But most people don't do it because there's a line between like dorky and nerdiness, you know, and that's just dorky.
Yeah.
I guess the whole thing is being a nerd is cool, but being a dork is not cool. And if you don't look cool, then, you know.
There's a fine line between nerd and dork, I see.
Do you want these glasses? Do you want to have something that when you look out, you can automatically record something hands-free? You can ask for directions and it comes. I mean, I feel like it's a distraction.
Yeah, I cannot ever imagine a time in which just like pulling out my cell phone is not sufficient. I don't know, maybe I'm old school.
That's so dorky. Oh, gosh, that's dorky. I have yet to see any women that are wearing these. And also, I have this question. It seems like we're at this weird intersection of things in society where everything is about technology and doing multiple things at once and all these things, yet laws keep coming down, like let's say with regard to driving, can't text and drive. I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. They want you to use hands-free devices. I mean, are people using their Google Glass while they're driving? Is that illegal?
Right.
Wouldn't that be distracting?
I would assume so. If there's something streaming across your vision and you can't, you know, see through it, or I suppose you can still see through it, but you're going to be more focused on the words that are directly in front of your face and not the traffic or the bumper that you're about ready to hit.
Now, I also remember seeing something a couple weeks or months ago that they don't want people to be able to operate a GPS in their car.
Really?
That they want them to all be voice activated so that you're not fumbling with it.
Oh my gosh. Do you have a lot of people who use those GPSs to the point where they can't like function without them? They can't drive anywhere without them? I have three people in my life who do this.
Don't go there, because you and I have one person that's the same.
I cannot handle this. My mom and dad will do the same thing. Like we were, or like my buddy Dave, drink. We'll do the same thing. It's like you've been in my house 15,000 damn times. We've gone from my house to the bowling alley 14,000 times. You really need the GPS to go down the block? Oh, it's insane. People just get so addicted to these things.
And you know what? I know people that they don't have to text. They don't have to do any, they have nothing that's pressing right that moment. But like if they're at a stoplight, they have to look at their phone.
I'm so guilty at that. I feel weird if I'm sitting at the stoplight and I don't just at least look down. It feels like I should be doing something with my hands. I don't know. It just feels
10
like,
and 2, eyes on the road.
I stop at a stoplight. I know I've got another 30 to 40 seconds. And I got to look down at the phone. And wow. I'm so guilty. But I don't do it like to an extent where I'm, or like very extensively and or for too long. And watching and reading and responding and like people are honking at me because I didn't look up and see that the light turned green. Nothing like that.
I think a lot of these things are good for some people, but I mean, when we have to start putting in place regulations or there's the thought of laws that are going to come into effect that say you cannot text and walk down the street at the same time.
But then we'll never get those videos of people falling into fountains.
Like, I just don't understand, like, why can you not I am guilty of taking my phone out on the street, but I will actually stop, sort of, you know, move over to the side into a doorway or out of the way of oncoming traffic, do whatever business it is I feel I need to do on my phone, and then move along.
Yeah, I'm guilty with a lot of these things. But now, did you see about the fairness tax thing?
Yes, I did. That the marketplace fairness tax, which it's very funny because so many people just do not get this at all. It's just every headline that I see on local news and, you know, in on blogs and things, it's all like, now consumers are going to have to pay internet sales tax. No more, you know, sales tax free shopping on the internet. It never was without sales tax. You were supposed to remit that. And if you weren't remitting that tax every year for things that you purchased that you didn't pay tax on at the time of purchase, you were cheating the IRS.
And there's, I'm listening to like NPR and stuff, and all these people are, you know, small business owners or e-commerce based small business owners are coming out crying foul that they're going to be out of business. It's going to cost them $15,000, $20,000 just to get started. Plus, it's going to cost them all this money ongoing, in addition to the fact they have to start passing on the tax to a consumer or whatever, like everybody else does. And they're going to possibly have to go out of business or change their business altogether. And then the other question that people were saying on this NPR segment was, what happens if we get audited out of state? Now, I don't even know if I can be in business at all. And there's going to be all these accounting fees and lawyer fees and blah, 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 whatever. And it's all this scare tactic and fear and just a bunch of negative stuff. And nobody really understands the implications, at least how it is for us as affiliate marketers, that people are going to start, states are going to do this individually anyway. They're going to do this. And then we're going to all be screwed if we don't have the ability to have some centralized system to manage this.
But and plus, I mean, you know, take a look at, yes, we're talking about Amazon and some of the other big players, but people who already collect sales tax, this that is a technology program. You know, I mean, there's a software program that these smaller e-commerce vendors, it may initially cost a lot. I mean, there are over 7,000 tax codes in the U.S., which is ridiculous in itself. But, you know, people can install these programs to calculate how much the tax is going to be. And I realize there is going to be a little bit more of a hassle, but the casualty in all this was people in the affiliate marketing space, because the out for e-commerce vendors, they would say, well, if the only thing when California or somebody else enacts a law that requires this, the only thing that makes me have nexus or a physical presence is having affiliates in that state, I'll just drop them. And then those people are without jobs, and they're contributors to the local economy, to the state economy with their taxes. It's just, it's so much better, you know, to have this be a national thing. And I really wish people understood that.
You know, I first of all, I totally agree with you. And I found it really interesting that all the coverage is more focused on the negative aspects of this, with regard to the fact that some people can consider this a new tax, that, you know, that this is some new government bureaucratic entity, you know, suppressing business and stifling growth and imposing taxes and all the negative ramifications therein, right? That's really the, you know, the spin that I keep hearing on the radio and on TV. And yet there's all these bricks and mortar companies, like small businesses, who don't do anything on the internet, and they've got to pay taxes, and they've been bitching about this forever, just from their perspective, and that's, you know, how a lot of the stuff starts, right? Now, with this whole new taxes being imposed and a new precedent for how we tax people, I found it really intriguing and interesting to hear people taking this even further and saying, well, what about income taxes? Can you start taxing somebody's income across state lines if they happen to do some consulting on the internet? If they do some portion of their revenue is based in a different state? Will you have to be taxed?
Well,
that state's perspective. You know what?
And when I was working with the Performance Marketing Association, and we were dealing with more state battles before the Marketplace Fairness Act was introduced by Enzi and Durbin, what we would hear is people saying things like, this could extend to, you know, what if you're in one state? What if you're in one state, but you hire somebody to do video production for you and they're in another state? Does that mean that now you have some kind of nexus established in the other state?
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I realize that constitutionally, states are not supposed to have the rights over other states to collect taxes. So if I'm a business and I only operate in California, then the Constitution says that, you know, Nevada and Texas, and they can't tell me what to do because I'm not operating my business in their state. And I agree with that, but the internet has changed things, and states are losing money because people are not paying their taxes on this.
It's a complicated matter.
Yes. It is very complicated, but I think if you were to ask 10 people that you met on the street today and say, when you filed your income tax, you know, a month ago, did you include paying tax on all the things you purchased on the internet where you may not have been taxed? Like, did you add up all your Amazon purchases and say, wow, I spent $700 at Amazon and this much at this company and this much at this company, and I was not charged tax, and therefore I owe that? And I would say that 10 out of 10 did not pay.
Oh, yeah, totally agree. 9.8 out of 10.
Well, so that means we're one step closer. It's got to pass in the House, and we'll see how that goes. Hopefully it will be a common sense thing and not a partisan thing. So I hope that politics won't make this unbearable for the industry that we're in.
Yeah, no, I agree. It'd be nice if there's some resolution, and so it's, you know, there's the overhanging issue is addressed, resolved, and we can all just move forward. Would be nice.
It would be very nice, that is for sure. So we keep promising that we're going to talk about
is it the A word.
Yeah, do we have time?
Yeah, I can't.
So
wait.
I think the reason that I'm so always eager to talk about attribution is that it's a big deal now where merchants are curious to know, what am I spending my money on and what am I getting results from? And on top of that, how do I reward the people in that chain that are helping me sell more stuff? How do I reward the role that they play appropriately? And I think that the reason this is causing problems is there are a lot of people that feel they influenced. An affiliate may feel that their hard work and their reviews and the content they created really influenced a sale. And then people get to the checkout and they see, oh, you know, have you entered your coupon code? So they go out, they look for a coupon, and then they put that in. And now the coupon affiliate gets credit, and the affiliate who drove them there doesn't get credit. But then other people say, well, maybe they wouldn't have actually made the purchase if it weren't for the coupon. So I think there's a lot about attribution. And you've been, I kind of want to go back and have you tell us how you figure into this sort of way back in the day.
Right. Well, so way back in the day, so I'd like to also kind of taking a step back about this whole attribution thing. You know, it's clearly a huge issue for affiliate marketers because we are compensated based upon our performance. And so the question of attribution for affiliates is how are we compensated, or how is our compensation affected, or is it removed altogether based upon the rules that a business applies its attribution model to, right? Mm-hmm. When we take a step back and just kind of think about it, pre-affiliate marketing, and like there is no compensation associated with this, everybody understands that there's multiple touch points a consumer or a customer takes to become a lead, to learn about a company, or to learn about a product, and then ultimately purchase that product or become a customer or become a lead for a company, right? And so there's a number of different marketing touch points. And us as marketers, we always want to know, to whatever extent we can know, how our marketing efforts are delivering us new quality prospects and how they're converting into customers, right? So if we do old school magazine ads or newspaper ads or yellow page ads, you want to know how all that stuff's working, right? And sometimes you know and sometimes you don't know. On the internet, everything's trackable. You can figure out pretty much everything, where somebody finds you, what they're doing on your site, when they became a lead, to what degree they became engaged with your company, and your brand and your messaging, and you can track everything. So enter analytics and much stronger ROI tracking for ad buys and media buys. Now if you enter in affiliate marketing and the compensation model, then it really throws everything really hardcore into the focus of this direct attribution relating to compensation question, because affiliates, again, we are compensated based upon how we interacted with that customer. At what point did we bring that company, this brand new customer, completely ourselves? We walk this person, take them by the hand, and hand them directly to the company directly, and no other interaction happened whatsoever, and we handed them that customer, and for that we expect our full commission? Or did we whisper to them about this company and let them go figure something out? Or did they, you know, find out about the company and come and ask us about it, get our review, and then go make a purchase? You know, all these different touch points are questions for us as marketers, and with attribution being so directly correlated with the compensation of affiliates, it's really weird, and it's very difficult, it's clumsy, and the real difficulty is in the communication of it, and then, of course, the implementation. So how this whole thing started for me is a much simpler story. I was selling affiliate tracking and management software called My Affiliate Program a long time ago, one of the first affiliate tracking software for in-house solutions ever made. And we sold it to companies who wanted to track their own internal affiliate program. What some of our really smart customers would do is that they would apply an affiliate ID to a media spend. So let's say they have 10 affiliates. So affiliate ID number 1 through affiliate ID number 10, those are all affiliates. And they have their own websites and review sites and coupon sites, whatever. But affiliate number 11 was a media buy at Yahoo. And affiliate number 12 was keyword search term number 1. And affiliate number 13 was keyword search term number 2, what I'm saying keyword for paid search, right? Mm-hmm. So they'd apply, these smart customers of ours would say, for all of our media spends, we're going to have this affiliate ID and therefore the appropriate click tracking, which will be associated with a banner. So if I put a banner up on Yahoo for my website, my merchant, abc.com, I'm going to get the affiliate link for affiliate number 11. And use that associated with the banner that I'm going to put on Yahoo. And when I bid for keyword number 1, I'm going to use that affiliate ID, affiliate link for affiliate number 12. And that's my click-through URL. So now I can track all that stuff centrally. So I know my 10 affiliates and my 3 different media outlets are all centrally located in my affiliate tracking system. And so what this one customer of mine particularly is, I call him Uncle Dougie. He's a really cool guy. And so Uncle Dougie calls me and he says, I need to be able to track this, Todd. Like, and he actually used Yahoo and keywords as his examples, that he buys media on Yahoo for the brand awareness and the exposure, and he uses affiliates to do the reviews and to drum up not just awareness, but brand recognition and enthusiasm and excitement, and of course direct sales as well. And then he uses paid search campaigns. So he recognizes that all three of these things can touch the same customer. But he's like, I need to know how to do this. So we just made sure that all the cookie tracking, all the tracking elements, that every single affiliate ID, we didn't just overwrite their cookies. We put a timestamp. So every time affiliate number one sent a visitor, let's say you're the visitor, and you clicked on affiliate number one's link, you'd be cookied with affiliate number one. And then you'd come to, let's say, the media buy on Yahoo, which is affiliate number 11. Instead of overwriting your cookie with affiliate number 11, and therefore meaning affiliate 11 has complete 100% attribution, we're simply going to append affiliate 11 to this cookie. So now when we do the final, on the checkout process, when the thank you page has come up, you've already taken your credit card out, you've entered your payment, and you've hit submit, and now here's a thank you confirmation page. That's where the cookie is read on your web browser to figure out, who do we compensate? Was there an affiliate associated with a sale? Yes or no? If so, who is it? And then our system would compensate the affiliate. When we started tracking this with the multiple touch points and the multiple cookies, what we were able to do then is realize that a sale oftentimes would happen where the customer would click a Yahoo banner, they would also click a paid search link, and then they would buy through an affiliate. Or actually, it's oftentimes it was Yahoo ad, then affiliate, and then paid search. And Uncle Dougie was smart enough to not say he wanted to screw the affiliates out of their commission. He just wanted to be able to compensate them appropriately based upon the fact he had to spend money on the Yahoo component, and he had to spend money on the paid search. He just needed to keep his overall acquisition, customer acquisition costs to a very specific amount. Mm-hmm. And if he didn't manipulate or have some flexibility with the compensation of that affiliate for their role, he would have had to pay the full affiliate commission, plus pay the full media spend at Yahoo, and the cost per click on the paid search term. So anyway, it was a really interesting time, very interesting conversation. That's how it all got started, and that was 2001, maybe?
Wow.
2002, when we're having this conversation. And we had really dove into that quite a bit, but at the time, you had to be really savvy just to understand what I just said, first of all. And then to be able to implement it, you had to be even more savvy. And then to be able to communicate it to your affiliates, that is almost impossible at the time, based upon the people people needed apples to apples to compare. If I'm mm-hmm. promoting speakers or whatever, I need to know I'm getting 12% commission from this merchant, and I'm getting 12% commission from this merchant. Who sells a better product? Who can convert my sales better? Who's going to work with me better? And focus on that. But the ones you enter attribution questions, it changes everything. So people just wanted to steer clear from it.
But I think one of the things now that people are having trouble with is that, there are so many touch points, especially on particular types of items. I mean, I don't know anybody that just says, maybe for a big ticket item, like, I'm going to just go out and buy a washer and dryer. I mean, social media influences things. They look at reviews of things. They ask friends for recommendations. They see what other people have said about things. I mean, you can't just credit one touch point when a sale is made. And also, there are certain things that you can't even tell. Like, I might have gone on an affiliate site, saw something that I thought was interesting. Maybe it wasn't a product that needed a lot of research or whatever. It was a $50 item or something. And I click on it, and right before I get to the checkout process on the vendor's website, I receive a phone call. And there's no way for you to track that, you know, where a friend, I said, I can't talk to you now. I'm buying this, whatever, this fan or something. And somebody said, don't, you know, oh, I wouldn't buy that one. I would buy this one. Or if you're going to buy that one, upgrade to this. Or, you know, I mean, I think there's no real way you can get close to understanding how a customer gets there. But I don't think you can get all the way. And, you know, and you also can't discount like what subliminally, you know, I might have received an email 3 months ago that I don't even really remember getting, but I kind of remember the brand from it.
Right. Well, the thing is, though, like what you're kind of describing there is a pretty extreme example, right? Which are, it's reasonable, but I think that all marketers under any circumstance recognizes that there's going to be outliers. And what we can really manage is, what, like 80%, 85%, maybe 90% of the flow of customers. And that's what we have to, you know, recognize. There will be some losses. We're not going to be able to truly track everything for those extreme examples. But, you know, wherever we can minimize them, we obviously want to do that as much as possible. But to be able to just at least recognize that a majority of your customer flow comes through touch point 1, 2, then 3. And then, you know, another segment of your customer flow comes from 2, 1, then 3 or whatever. At least to be able to recognize what it is. It's huge because that comes into overall customer lifetime value, the total cost of acquiring a customer. These are smart and important metrics that businesses have to understand.
Well, also, don't you think that, you know, affiliates might say, I'm not pleased that, you know, in particular instances, I'm only getting, you know, this percentage of a commission as opposed to the full commission or whatever. But what they don't realize is that attribution may actually expand the pie because the ability to have that granular a look into what you're spending as a merchant is likely to bring more merchants into the performance marketing space because they see the ROI and the value that they're getting on the dollars they spend.
Yeah, I can see that. But I also can see that, you know, there is the general knee-jerk fear that if you think that there is a potential that someone can screw you over, that you might default to assume that they will, right? So if I have a very simple rule, and the rule is you get 10% commission and the last cookie wins. That's the rule. That's as simple as that. It's clean. But if I say, well, you get 10% under this scenario, you get 5% under this scenario, and you get 2% under this scenario, I will, maybe the conspiracy theorist in me will assume, oh, that means I'm getting 2% on pretty much everything. Screw that. You know, and so there's some fear there. However, you know, I think the real expansion for affiliates would be that when the retail me nots out there, those guys who are taking my commissions, when I get somebody to be interested in buying a product based on my reviews and my natural search rankings and the social media aspects and the relationship that I have with these new customers that I'm sending to a merchant, and I know it anecdotally that I'm sending people directly to this merchant, but they still want to look for a coupon at checkout, and they do, and they get the Retail Me Not coupon, overwrites my cookie, and the Retail Me Not gets my 10% and I get 0. So if the more affiliates realize that part of attribution discussion can actually benefit them, that when those scenarios occur and the Retail Me Not affiliate, you know, does not overwrite your cookie because there is that smart attribution, a business model associated with this compensation model, then yes, I think that many affiliates would recognize that as a benefit.
Isn't a solution, though, for some of these vendors to or merchants to just offer their own coupons at the checkout?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's what we've been arguing for many years now. Just, you know, try to bypass those last-minute affiliate, I don't want to say poachers, because that's not necessarily,
well, I mean,
but
there,
they are, taking money.
But you know what? There's also scenarios where, you know, in some cases, a coupon's come to me for a product and I've been thinking, oh, I need a new vacuum. And, you know, I see a coupon And so, I'm thinking, well, maybe, that's what drove me to go to the site in the first place, not the other way around.
And in then those I cases, check yeah. out
a review, you know, because it's like, oh, I have a coupon to save this much on this brand. Oh, I don't know much about them. I'll look up a review about them.
Right. Well, the thing is, we can talk about this a lot longer, but we're already closing in our time. But, you know, I think that the general flow of a customer from intent to buy, the review process happens well in advance of, or not well in advance, but at least the research component, the research process. So there's the consideration, trying to identify your solution, and then you're researching that solution. And depending upon where you are within that buying intent, that's oftentimes going to happen well in advance of the coupon. So the coupon is almost, a majority of the time will be happening after the review process has been done. If that makes any sense.
It does. And as we said, we could talk about this forever, and we probably will talk about it again. I hope we will, because there are other things to consider. But for now, since we're almost at our time, do you have any of your shameless self-promotion that you need to do?
I want to be shameless self-promotion free. I spoke way too much in this podcast. How about you? I want to defer to the gentlewoman from San Francisco.
I don't have any real shameless self-promotion at all. Just, I'm still, I got a few fun things on the hook for projects I'm going to work on since I have some additional consulting time, but I'm still looking for something else. I'm looking for something that makes me go, wow.
Well, somebody's got to gobble you up, because they're going to be a lucky son of a bitch.
What do you think, do you have anything that you're doing that makes you go, wow?
Wine tasting fundraising.
Okay.
Seriously, I actually do enjoy that quite a bit, but that's all volunteer stuff.
Well, it's good, though, to have something that makes you feel like that. That's a very good thing. And I have a feeling that you're applying your marketing skills to help with that. So
we're almost sold out.
All right. Well, that is very good news. So, we had a lot of actual talking about real things.
Yeah, let's not do that ever again.
Oh, yeah, that's too much. My head almost starts.
Oh, my God, that's what I was going to say. All right, well, show's got to be over. We're already over time. We were committing to 30 minutes, and I think we're like 4 minutes over time.
Oh, my God, stop it right now. Stop.
Okay.
All right, we're done.
Have a lovely day, Lisa Piccarelli. Thanks a lot. I'll see you next week, same time, same place.
All right. Right?
Take care.
Yes, sir.
See ya.
Bye. My head hurts.
Well, you got to have longer of a second pause for the and outro music, because I'm going to put something brilliant on here. No, I'm not really going to do that at all.
You're not going to do anything brilliant?
No.
Don't worry, I had low expectations.
Oh, if I had a dime for every time I was told that.
What, the low expectations? That's like the thing that I put on Facebook where I said something. It started the whole Kohl's cash thing where I got this weird email that was obviously English was not someone's first language, and it was from HR agency, and I hadn't really applied for anything online, and I hadn't been on any job sites at all. Everything I was doing was all through friends and contacts, mm-hmm. sending out messages saying I'd like to work with you, or wondering if you have projects or whatever. And it said something about how I would be qualified to work at Kohl's. And it honestly felt like, some kind of weird skit where the guidance counselor tells you that you're really only qualified to be a pet groomer, and that's it. There's no other skill you have. You are qualified to be a, waste removal consultant.
That's a An engineer of some sort. Sanitation engineer.
Sanitation engineer. But that just made me laugh really hard because I thought like, oh, well, Kohl's must have an opening for someone that, you know, does content or social media or something. And then I'm reading this. I'm like, this is really poorly written and bad grammar. And then it's like going on about being a sales associate and all this stuff. And it made me laugh very hard.
Oh, well, I have, so Teresa, as you know, my ex is heading out to Napa for that bottle rock thing with a few of our friends. And she gave me a bunch of these Kohl's cash as she was leaving. She goes, I got this, all these Kohl's cash bucks that I want you to use, have the kids go buy me something for Mother's Day. all right. I was all excited. She's like, I got 40 bucks of Kohl's cash. Like, fucking bingo. I'm getting a shirt.
And she then
goes, no,
like,
not for you.
Not for you.
Right. It's like, all right, fine.
Ah, so now you got to take the kids out shopping. You know, I was going to say the one bad thing about her going on that trip to Napa is your kids are getting older and Evan has already been to a large rock festival with grown-ups. So she can't be like, it was a work trip and whatever. He's going to be like, I know what happens at those things.
Yeah, he actually, she came over this morning so I could drive her to the airport. So she's coming in and she's kissing the kids goodbye, and I hear Evan say, Mom, when I'm 21, can I go to Bottle Rock with you? Yeah.
That's so funny. It's the first one, so I hope that they all enjoy it. I have to tell you that a festival, I know Napa, I know the area, and the idea of so many people in that small a space, and there's really, you know, it's like going to Cape Cod or something. There's only like two roads to get there. That's it. And I just have to say, I would not want to be involved in that.
I just honestly can't even picture where they're going to hold this event. Is it across the entire town?
Well, it's in downtown. It's a lot of it is in downtown Napa. So, you know, but I mean, you know, you've been up there. There's really just one highway going up through the Napa Valley, you know, through Healdsburg and Napa itself and, you know, Oakville and all that. So that it's going to be like bumper to bumper.
Yeah, I can see that.
And you stuff.
Know, I just wish
you
I
get a song.
I wish I was paying attention to it. When we're in the limo after, you know, Brian always kind of organizes where we go. And so I'm just sitting in the limo and we're just like laughing and being goofy with one another. I'm not really paying attention to the route. And so I don't really have a real clear picture of like all the different main thoroughfares inside Napa. You know, I can picture like the Oakville grocery.
Yeah. And Delhi. That's one of the main roads.
I can totally picture that. And the, like the train that's, you know, parallel to that street on the other side, you know, of the building.
The wine train.
Is that the wine train?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's such a beautiful area.
Well, you know what? We are supposed to have some hot weather here this weekend, a little bit unseasonably hot. So they will have some great weather for sure up there and enjoy it. So James's hippie friends all bowed out because Further was supposed to play, you know, which is like the latest incarnation of the Grateful Dead, whoever's left over and not dead. I guess that's everyone but Jerry or something. And but they bowed out at the last minute, so none of James's hippie friends are going up.
I don't know a thing about that Further thing.
Yeah, I just know that he was supposed to go up there and do something on the day they were playing, and now he's not. So that's
you're
all.
In the know.
Yes, I'm in the know. I know so much, yet so little.
Yes, indeed. All right, my friend.
Okay, well, I would also like to say that I believe I have a piece that I wrote for you that should be going up on the AF plan.
Yeah, I know. I'm slacking. I'll put it up there today. Or maybe not today.
Maybe not today, okay.
Yeah, no, it's because it's already cutting close. Because I want to give it the proper amount of attention. that it deserves.
Okay, so it isn't because you're lazy and procrastinating and you have a lot of other things to do, like go spend your Kohl's cash. It's really because it's all in deference to paying me the respect.
Indeed.
That I deserve, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm laughing because you're so dead on.
Perceptive?
Accurate. Yes, exactly.
I'm just so perceptive. Yes,
no shit.
Well, enjoy your day, which probably will be shopping with the kids and get some ice cream or something.
No, I'm not shopping. That Kohl's shit can be waiting. We can wait till the weekend.
Okay. Well, I will talk to you soon, and enjoy the day.
All right. It is beautiful. And just so you know, it took a lot out of me to shut my window here in the office so you wouldn't have to hear the birds chirping. And now the lawnmower is going out in my neighbor's
yard. Well, we had the earthquake alarm that goes off the same time every week. And I was afraid the dogs were going to start barking, but everybody was good.
Wow.
It's all good.
Nice.
All right.
All right, amigo. I'll see you soon. Talk to you later.
Bye.
All right, bye.